Expressing your love can look many different ways, and with the right jewelry gift from Blue Nile, it can truly sparkle. Blue Nile's collection of classic diamond jewelry makes for the kind of gift that speaks volumes without saying a single word. Or switch things up with a sapphire piece sure to spark conversation. Either way, Blue Nile's diamond guarantee ensures you get the highest quality at the best price. Express yourself with Blue Nile, the original online jeweler, at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Matea, reminding you that this show cannot be made without you. If you've been thinking about becoming a Canada Land supporter, we're having a pretty great sale right now. You'll get premium ad-free feeds of all Canada Land shows, discounts on merch from our store, and exclusive bonus episodes, like a behind-the-scenes tour of the federal budget lockup, more of Boris Johnson's trip to Canada, and of course, more of us yapping about what's hot in politics right now. We want to make it as easy as possible for you to become a Canada Land supporter. So from now until the end of May, we have a special offer for our listeners. Sign up now for just $2 a month for the next 6 months. Just go to canadaland.com/join or click the link in your show notes to become a supporter today.
Hey, it's Fatma Sayed, and this is The Backbench, a podcast about Canadian politics.
E vorrei dirvi di tutto cuore, sono molto addolorato.
I ask for God's forgiveness, and I want to say to you with all my heart, I am very sorry.
That was Pope Francis delivering his apology to Indigenous people who suffered in the residential school system. This moment was decades in the making. The Truth and Reconciliation Commission documented over 4,000 kids who died in that system, died while attending school. They suspect the number is much higher than that, and there are a plethora of allegations of sexual and physical assault in those institutions. 5 years ago, after the Truth and Reconciliation Commission came out, Justin Trudeau asked the Pope to apologize to them. He didn't. This time, though, a delegation of residential school survivors and Indigenous community leaders got to meet with the Pope face to face and talk to him about the harms they faced at the hands of the Catholic Church. Now, I know it's been a busy week in Canadian politics. The budget just came out. That's some 300 pages for us to understand. And the Conservative leadership race is heating up, along with a billion other things. We'll dig into all that soon, I promise. But this moment was a huge reminder of how much political and cultural power the Catholic Church has had and continues to hold over Indigenous people's lives in this country. So today we're getting into the significance of four words. I am very sorry. I'm talking to two people to understand all this. One, a residential school survivor who's been waiting to hear those words for 58 years. And the other is a youth delegate who met with the Pope to share the stories of her people and to ask for that apology. A disclaimer, this episode does get into some heavy stuff, abuse, suicide, and death. Let's get into it. So just a few days after the apology, I got on the phone with Norman Yakeula.
Merci, so today. In my language, I said thank you, my people. The weather is beautiful.
He's a residential school survivor, one of about 80,000 who are estimated to be living today. When I called him, he had just gotten back to Canada and was still processing what just happened.
I'm still somewhere in... Is it still true? And is it happening?
Norman wasn't part of the official delegation who spoke to the Pope, but he was in Rome to witness this moment. He's also a former National Dene chief, and until recently, he was a regional representative of the Assembly of First Nations.
As a regional chief of Assembly of First Nations, this was my lead file.
Okay.
Here the path, I walked the steps.
You helped organize this.
That's right. That's right. You know, I want to be humble, but, you know, I did that.
Like I said in the introduction, Norman has been waiting for this moment for 58 years.
I knew at the age of 5 years old that something wasn't right. Something didn't feel right. You don't do this to a little boy. You don't speak to a little boy in this manner.
Can you tell me a little bit about what treatment you received while you were a five-year-old in a residential school?
Well, the first one, the treatment wasn't in a humane way. And the first one that we knew and I experienced was by them issuing us young boys a number. So that's the identity. So I always refer to the number of 153. They didn't call me by Norman. They said 153, mm-hmm. And if you had that number, you would raise your hand. So the whole identity is a big issue for the survivors. The identity of your language. So when you spoke your language, as I spoke this morning in our language to greet you, we couldn't say "Masi Tutene Tutene Kono Song." If you said that, they put soap in your mouth, slap you on the head, and the nuns would say that's the language of the devil. Nobody wants to be associated with the devil. So that was a number one indicator that our language was wrong. Our clothes that our grandmothers and mothers sewed for us, our traditional mukluks, gloves, parkas, were all stripped of us, and we never saw them again. We were given different clothes. The other one was the foods that we ate weren't of our traditional foods. It was a total different diet. And the punishments were corporal-like punishments, military-type punishments, put in closets, not fed, strapped, everything that dehumanized us. And of course, then we had to suffer through the abuses, the physical abuse, sexual abuse, spiritual abuse, and cultural abuse. When you look at it, it was a real dehumanization process. We couldn't even talk to my sisters on the other side of the residential school hostel. We had no contact with them. If we did speak to the girls, it was a sin and we would be punished for it. So we had no contacts with the girls, with my sisters, my family members. We couldn't have that. So really, it was a experience that I never thought that the world was like this. I only knew love, happiness, laughter from my family, from my community of Fort Norman. And I got into another world that was not real. This can't be happening.
When did you realize you deserved an apology?
I knew it at 5 years old. If you do something that is harming another person, I knew when my mom, my grandmother would have to say, go over there and say you're sorry. You hurt somebody. I knew that was a strong value, principle that we had to respect another person. But who would listen to a 5-year-old boy that just knows that this is not right? And so I kept that for 58 years until last week. I heard His Holiness, the Father, I am very sorry. And I read his statement 3 or 4 times, and I'm still reading it. Every word has power. It was so unreal that I couldn't believe it. After all these years, that's all I wanted to hear from the Roman Catholic Church.
Norman, hearing you talk about all of this, you know, there's a lot of emotions involved. You know, hearing you tell me that for the longest time you were called a number instead of your name, and all the abuses that, you know, you faced in that school system as a 5-year-old, that's a lot to bear for so many decades. How do you prepare for a trip like this, where you know that you might finally get what you need to move on from that part of your life?
Well, throughout the years, you know your truth. You stand on your truth. It's very scary because you're getting to know who you are and to share what you have gone through, things that you haven't shared before. Now, I got a call from my brother a couple days ago. My brother is 1 year older than me. And it's the first time my older brother shared his experience at Collier Hall, residential school that we attended.
He'd never talked about it before?
We never talked about it before. Talked to my sister, how it felt for her to see us little boys and not talk to us. Not talk about our abuses that happened to us. We kept it secret. In the residential school, we had 3 rules. Don't talk about what happened to you. Don't feel what happened to you. And don't trust anybody. By going over and preparing, we had to start talking like this today about what really happened. And there's a different level that you talk to with other people about what happened at the residential school. We start to feel the anger, the shame, the hurt. We start to really feel it. And not to use any other means to cover that pain anymore.
Norman, were all of these emotions at display in the delegation? Like, can you tell me a little bit about your first few days there? What did you all do, see, feel in the lead up to the day of the apology?
We all came together in Canada. It was like the first time we came to the residential schools. We all come from different cultures, teachings, traditions, experiences. We worked with the Assembly of First Nation as I was on that file. We start to gather the names of the delegates from across Canada and how we're going to organize ourselves and how we're going to work with the Council of Catholic Bishops and the message that we're going to give to His Holy Father.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
One of the people who was chosen to convey that message was Taylor Bain Tecoza. She's a co-chair of the Assembly of First Nations National Youth Council. She was one of 15 people with the First Nations delegation. Taylor is 26 years old. She was born the year the last residential school closed. She doesn't have any personal experiences here, but many members of her family did.
Growing up, my family didn't really talk about residential school, and I remember learning about it in grade five. And my grade five teacher, he either asked the class or he approached me. He was like, hey, do you know of anyone who's a survivor? And I said, oh yeah, like all my aunties and uncles are survivors. And he's like, oh, do you think one of your family members would come? And I said, oh yeah, for sure. Like my uncle will totally come and talk to our class. I remember I kept like, hey, uncle, you got to call the school. Okay. My teacher is so-and-so and you have to ask for him. And then he's going to set up a time for you to come talk to my class. And he never did come. At the time, I just was like, I think even back then, I didn't really understand the full effects or what happened there because people never talked about it. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, leading up to like, to being part of this delegation, you know, I really had to do a lot of learning for myself because that wasn't shared with me. But I was like, you know, I want to be part of this healing too. We talk about reconciliation being this intergenerational journey. And I think everyone is entitled to healing, including, you know, those intergenerational survivors. And so, yeah, just when the opportunity came about and I just thought, you know, this is how I can, you know, help my generation and those to come by just being part of these conversations, having a presence, and really all just, I think, built up our messaging to what we were trying to convey to the Pope. And I really think we were successful in that.
That's so inspiring and admirable to hear you just, you know, be ready to take on that responsibility. I did notice that there was an APTN video which shows, I think it's your mom. And she says to you, and I'm quoting, I still don't like that you're going to the house of ill repute. And I know a lot of people question the entire purpose of this delegation and this trip. You know, we're a week since it happened. So how did you process your mom's criticism or other people's criticism of this trip?
Oh, my mom. And I, you know, when I first had accepted this role, I think that's what it was that being this youth voice. Like there was my mom who was very outspoken on national television about her not agreeing with me going, but also just the whole delegation as a whole. But I also received a lot of that from survivors in my family, survivors in my community. A lot of people on Facebook expressing that, you know, they felt that this trip wasn't needed, that it was a waste of money, that the Pope's words don't mean anything, like all these things that I can only try to emphasize with them because, like I mentioned, a lot of those people are survivors. My mom actually isn't a survivor. She's the first one in my family to not have to go. But I can only imagine like where that pain is sitting for them. I definitely absorbed it when I first heard that they're like, we don't want you to go. I was like, I kind of questioned. I'm like, oh man, should I go? Like, is this something I should do? But again, it was that reflection piece when I really sat with that and I said, that's their journey. I have to acknowledge that, but I have to recognize that I also have my own journey. And even thinking about my journey to get to the Assembly of First Nations and then being the co-chair of the Assembly of First Nations National Youth Council, I started this work around 2021. And so 5 years that I've dedicated my life to advancing and advocating for and creating space for Indigenous youth to be part of these discussions, for Indigenous youth to be part of, you know, this reconciliation journey, to really find healing within themselves and their communities. And so I just thought, like, wow, you know, I've worked really hard for this moment. And in my heart, I just knew that I had to do this, even though there was pressure from my family, my community to not go. And I have so much respect for my community, my people, my mom. But again, it just, there was something in me that just said, you were led to this moment for a reason. And, you know, walking out of that meeting, that private audience with the Pope and even the general audience, that feeling I got that was just like, that just felt like it was worth it. Like hearing those words, I am very sorry, and looking the Pope right in the eye and saying, my people are dying. Like, it was because of the policies that your institution has created. But, you know, it was in those moments that just, you know, reassured me that, like, I was meant to be there and that these conversations are so vital. And it's a lot to process. I'm still processing. Yeah.
Can you take us inside the room? You know, what's the first thing you saw? What's the first thing you heard, felt? Like, what was it like?
Yeah, you know, it was, and it's still so surreal. I think about it, I'm like, holy, like, what just happened? Like, it's so crazy. So of course you have to go through quite a bit of security. You got to walk past these Swiss guards when you get into the Vatican. We got there just on time, so they're trying to like shuffle us. They're like, okay, we got to go, the Pope's waiting. We're like, oh, sorry, like, okay. So we're all like, they're calling us all the delegation out one by one, and you just walk through like door after door after door. But as soon as you walk in, the Pope was right at the front of the door, and I was like, holy, I was like, oh my gosh. And he was shaking each of our hand as we came in. And I was like, hello, like, nice to meet you, I'm Taylor. And then we sat down and we started our meeting in a pipe ceremony. Our elder, Fred Kelly, had lit his pipe in the Vatican. And to see the Pope's face, because you could see he was kind of like, what is he doing? Like, he never said anything, but just his eyes, like, were so big. And, you know, our elder lit the pipe because that's our way, you know. And we really wanted to emphasize to the Pope, like, we're still here. Our culture and our traditions are still so strong. Mm-hmm. So, like, that was beautiful. And then, yeah, we just, each of us went around. And myself and my co-chair were the third last to go. So went Rosalie, myself, and then our female elder. So we were, like, at the end. And Rosalie was speaking. Oh, and I have to preface that it's been pouring in Rome the week that we were there.
Okay.
It was healing. Hasn't hailed in Rome in 20 years. They haven't seen downpour like they've seen that when we were there in months. And so when Rosalie is speaking, she just, oh, her presence, her voice is so powerful. And she was just like, oh, just giving it to the Pope. And was just like, just telling her truth, you know, being so poised about it. And oh, I was just so amped up with what she was saying. Next thing you know, these big 20-foot tall windows that are like on this side of the room, the clouds just part and the sun just shines into this room and literally lit up Rosalie. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, looking at the sun, and I'm like, what the hell? Like, it was beautiful. And then in St. Peter's Square, there was drummers and singers that were out there, and it just got louder and louder. And the room was just like kind of echoing with the drums and the singing that was going on. And Rosalie's still going and just being a powerhouse that she is. And like, that means something. Like, this big gust of wind, the clouds parting, the sun just shining through on like this next generation of leaders.
What did you say to him, Taylor? Like, when it was your turn to have an audience with the Pope, what do you say to him and how did he respond?
Yeah, so I get pretty nervous when I have to speak. But when Rosalie went, that's when the butterflies had hit me. Was like, oh, okay, I'm next. Like, get it, like, you know, like, really.
Deep breath.
Yeah, like, deep breath to really speak what you have to say. And I did have, like, speaking notes, so I already knew what I was going to say. But just making sure that he knew, you know. And so when it came to me, you know, I just shared that, you know, I never went to residential school. I live with the effects of it every single day. I told him that, you know, our people are the fastest growing demographic in Canada, yet we have the highest suicide rates. And, you know, our people aren't killing themselves because they want to die. They're killing themselves because they see it as a last resort to escaping the pain the hopelessness that they feel because of the colonial institution that is the Catholic Church. So I shared a lot about that. And I go into, like, you know, really expressing how the doctrine of discovery has caused a lot of harm to our people. It just really pressured him to rescind that papal bull that comprised the doctrine of discovery and this idea of terra nullius, which a lot of the other speakers had already expressed that as well. But I just felt it was so important that I reiterate that, especially if we're thinking about our future relationship, which is what the theme I was talking on. And then I also talked about the repatriation of artifacts that the Vatican currently holds. And yeah, that was kind of all I had time for, because you have to think that there was already 13 people that went before me, and then there's one person that went after me. Mm-hmm. So a lot of things were covered, but those were kind of the top things that I chose to share with him. But yeah, and then so the Pope actually just responded after everyone had went. So it wasn't a one-on-one. It was just like we all went, and then he responded to us as a group.
When you were talking, did you feel like he was listening to you?
It might be hard for people who weren't there. I wish I could share how I'm feeling, but I do believe he was listening. From the eye contact, from when our survivors were going, there was times that they shared the truth, you know, all the abuses, physical, emotional, sexual, you know. There was times that he just bowed his head and would just kind of like shook his head. So I think from his body language, I really got that. But even when I shook his hand for the last time, when we walked out, he gave each of us this little medal, just his sense that he was committed to walking this path with us. It's really hard. I wish I had the words to explain, but I really did feel that he was listening.
What was the medal that he gave you?
I'll show you this one first, because he gave this pearl rosary, but then this is what he gave to each of the delegates as well, is this. I believe it's Mary. I don't think this is Jesus, but he talked about it in Italian.
Taylor, what happens next? Because I know this is an apology, you know, people have waited years, decades even for. And I also know that there are people who are saying that it doesn't go far enough, that there still needs to be more action. People want reparations. They want a visit from the Pope and other priests to indigenous lands here. So in your opinion, having experienced all that you've experienced over the past week, what do you hope happens next?
What comes next is like the papal visit to Canada, which the Pope did say he will be in Canada this year in 2022. So there's that. And I really am hopeful that he's going to take his apology to where we were hoping was going to go, and for him to actually say, like, I apologize, I'm sorry on behalf of the entire Catholic Church. As we know, his apology that he gave last week was just on behalf of some of the members of the church, you know, which to some of us that was like, you know, we're thankful to hear the words I'm sorry, but we really do want to hear that acknowledgement on behalf of the entire institution. When he comes to Canada, I'm hoping that will happen. My personal ask of rescinding the doctrine of discovery, I hope that happens. Also working with Indigenous people to identify the artifacts that are held by the Vatican, trying to figure out which ones were stolen, because we do know from our oral histories and stories that some of those artifacts that they hold are stolen. And so just trying to, you know, figure that out. There's a lot that's going to have to happen after this, and that is going to happen because, you know, the entire world was watching. There was international media there. Canadian media was all over this. And I think, you know, I just think, like, well, you know, what does this mean for the Queen and for Canada? Those words, I'm sorry, is going to have legal implications moving forward. The Canadian Conference of Catholic Bishops, the CCCB, is going to have to work with Indigenous people. And there was a big ask by our national chief that the dioceses that are currently in Canada, that the CCCB oversees, that we encourage them to return the traditional lands that they sit on, that they be returned to those respective nations. So, and of course, compensation, like I could go on and on. I just think that, and we keep talking about, you know, this wasn't the start of reconciliation. This isn't the end. This is just another step. And I think for just like reflecting on it for myself, it's a giant step and it's going to have implications on everything moving forward.
Can I ask you one last question? What did your mom say when you came back and you told her some of the stuff that you've told me? What was her reaction?
Yeah, you know, she's still very, I don't think I've changed her mind yet.
Okay.
But also I haven't had the opportunity to actually share with her the details that I've even shared today. I don't think I'll change her mind, but I hope I give her another lens in which she can look through. And even other people that you know, that had similar perspectives as her. I just hope that that I can respect their where they're coming from, and I hope that that they can do the same for me.
His written statement and his apology to us at the Vatican on April 1st, and this was no April Fool's joke. There's going to be critics, and there's going to be people that are going to want to see things happening. Pessimistics, the opportunists, the realistics. We're going to get that. The scholars, the academic, and the traditional. The real action now is needed from the federal government. I always say that we got to work together to build a new Canada. The federal government, along with the Roman Catholic Church and the other churches, needs to sit and listen. Will you walk with us and accept us and respect us and give us the proper recognition as being one of God's children, just like you? The federal government can set up a Department of Reconciliation, or the churches could really honor the Truth and Reconciliation recommendations, 58, 59, 60.
The TRC call to action number 58 was the Pope's apology. Number 59 and 60 asked the Catholic Church to acknowledge, settle, and educate their members of the institution's role in the residential school system and its broader harms against Indigenous peoples.
That's going to take commitment to make the transformational shift.
Is there a particular moment from, you know, your week in the Vatican that will stay with you for the rest of your life?
Hearing his words will definitely stay with me. Seeing all the brothers and sisters of the residential school and the support we had, knowing that the young people are there, the elders, the residential school survivors. And what really struck me was after the apology, I went back to my hotel room with my wife. And, you know, being so unsurreal that I sat on my bed in the hotel room, you know, and I was so angry. All that rage and hurt and anger. My head was sore. I was angry, even in my language. After 58 years, it took this long for the Pope to say he was sorry. My mother's not alive anymore. My dad's are not alive anymore. Some of my family members, my cousins, are not alive. For 58 years, it took the Pope to say, "I am very sorry." 4 words. That's all he could have said a long time ago. Why did I carry and wanted to hear this, to say he was sorry the way that I was treated, my brothers, sisters, my friends, my mom endured, my granny, our communities, our culture. Everything came to the forefront, and I was angry. I even swore to the most beautiful person that supported me all through the hardships, my wife. She cried. And all I want is the Pope to come to my mother's grave and say, "I'm sorry, Laura. I'm sorry for what I've done. or my church or my people done to your children? The seven children that you sent to the residential school, the hurt that we endured. I wanted the Pope, just to say that to my mother. My mother paid the price. My granny, my father's. We paid the price. And I wanted the Pope to say that. I went to bed. I slept. I got up. I felt light. I felt good. I told my wife, let's go eat. I'm hungry. I got some really good Italian food down in Rome. Lasagna, spaghetti, pizza. It's all true. And the people in the restaurant were happy for us. They're just people like us. And I enjoyed the rest of the day knowing that the past is left now in the past.
Where it belongs.
I can move on. We can move on.
It's Ramadan and I'm fasting. And I know you started this conversation with your language. So I just want to say, we always, when we hope for something, we always say, inshallah, God willing.
Oh, beautiful.
So I hope that you and your people get what you want, inshallah.
Beautiful, beautiful. That's good. That's what we need to do, is to respect each other's spirituality. And I like what you said, in God's willing. Man, that makes me, you made my day.
You made mine, Norman.
You brought tears to my eyes right now as you talk. Man, that is so cool. God willing.
That's The Backbench. The Indian Residential Schools Resolution Health Support Program has a hotline to help residential school survivors and their relatives suffering from trauma invoked by past abuse. The number is 1-866-925-4419. Before I sign off, I do want to note that in the budget released last week, the federal government pledged $11 billion over 6 years to help Indigenous communities grow and shape their futures. That's a direct quote. This investment falls far short of the amount projected by Indigenous organizations like the Assembly of First Nations, who requested between $40 and $60 billion for Indigenous affairs for the 2022-2023 period. The budget also includes a list of measures to be taken to assist in the ongoing searches of former residential school sites, $4.7 billion to help Indigenous communities cope, $209 million to help them document, locate, and memorialize burial sites at former residential schools, build a new National Center for Truth and Reconciliation, and ensure complete disclosure of federal documents related to residential schools. An additional $25 million over 3 years will fund the digitization of documents relating to residential schools. The federal government is also allocating $10.4 million to Justice Canada to appoint a special interlocutor to improve existing federal laws to better protect unmarked burial sites. We've talked about some of this on the show and we'll keep talking about it. We'll have to wait and see what impact this funding will have. Please join us next week to hear our politics panel talk more about this budget. We'll have things to say. Send us your questions, your concerns, your rants. You can email us, backbench@canadaland.com. We're also on Twitter @backbenchcast. I'm Fatma Sayed, and you can find me on Twitter @FatmaBSayed. If you listen in Apple Podcasts, you can support us as well as Canada Land's other two political podcasts for just $2.99 a month. This episode was produced by Kevin Sexton with additional production by Tristan Capacchione. Our managing editor is Kieran Outshorn. Theme music is by Nathan Burley. Thanks for listening. See you next week.
Hey, it's Matea, reminding you that this show cannot be made without you. If you've been thinking about becoming a Canada Land supporter, we're having a pretty great sale right now. You'll get premium ad-free feeds of all Canada Land shows, discounts on merch from our store, and exclusive bonus episodes, like a behind-the-scenes tour of the federal budget lockup, more of Boris Johnson's trip to Canada, And of course, more of us yapping about what's hot in politics right now. We want to make it as easy as possible for you to become a Canada Land supporter. So from now until the end of May, we have a special offer for our listeners. Sign up now for just $2 a month for the next 6 months. Just go to canadaland.com/join or click the link in your show notes to become a supporter today.
Listen up, true crime fans.
There's a big murder trial underway.
Dateline is launching a new podcast with Andrea Canning.
Welcome to Dateline True Crime Weekly.
We'll cover breaking crime news around the country with the best reporters on the case, NBC News analysts, and Dateline producers on the ground.
Over. Break it down for us.
You'll just get behind-the-scenes scoops from crime scenes to courtrooms.
So tell us what he said.
Listen to Dateline True Crime Weekly now and catch new episodes every Thursday.
Wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.